and welcome to another interview from Jason's Connection. I'm Erica McIntyre, Jason's Connection's Content Director. Today, Jason Harris, founder of Jason's Connection, is going to be speaking with Jasmine Leiser, a college student, blogger for the Daily Californian, and young woman who experiences disability. Her writing is incisive, witty, and gives unique insight into both the college and disability experiences. And now here for the interview is Jason and Jasmine.
Hey, how's it going? So where do you go to college?
I am an undergraduate at the University of California, Berkeley. I'm a history major and pre-law.
And what year are you at Berkeley?
Right, so I'm a second year and I'm 20 years old. So the intent is to like eventually go to law school, or I would like to eventually go to law school. Hopefully one day law school eventually wants me to.
Mm-hmm. So then how does the history major play into that?
Right. So I am absolutely fascinated by narratives. And so I think it's really amazing that everything's an artifact. So if you think about like the specific history of the place that you are in right now, it's once been a part of like several other systems. So things like legal documents and marriage certificates are typically thought of as artifacts, but also things like paint chips and clothing and levels of soil contamination and all these different things all play into different narratives. And so it's really fascinating to me how some narratives are deemed more important than others, and then how those dominant narratives are taught in schools, and how like the history that we learned in school kind of like helps perpetuate those cycles of privilege and oppression. So for example, when I was in high school, I learned about the civil rights movement, but I never learned about the Chicano movement, I never learned about the queer movement, and I never learned about the DRIL movement, which is Disability Rights and Independent Living, which actually started here in Berkeley. And so that's kind of like what stemmed my interest in history.
Wow. And what clubs or other things are you involved with at Cal Berkeley?
Right. So at Cal, I work as a resident advisor. So I'm an RA. And what that means is I am like a mentor, an older student who lives in the dormitory with the younger students, and kind of like helps facilitate some of their like social bonding and connections and acts as like a resource. And then I'm also part of the University of California Rally Committee, which is a spirit group here on campus that goes to a lot of the football games and cheers and goes to a lot of the sporting events and cheers and acts as the ambassadors of student spirit. So that's really fun. And then I'm also a journalist with the Daily Californian.
Yeah, and what is the Daily Californian and how did you start writing for them?
Right. So the Daily Californian is a Berkeley newspaper, and we typically write about a lot of campus events and hire a lot of students. So we're unaffiliated with the ASUC, which is the Associate Students of the University of California. And so the Daily Cal is really great. So it has been around for a really long time and embodies a lot of the uniqueness that is Berkeley. While still reporting on a lot of the hard news and world news, though we do specifically focus on issues that are really pertinent to students, and part of that is our opinion column. And so I am an opinion blogger, and I have a column that comes out every Monday. And so what the opinion bloggers do is every day is different. We have a blogger for every day, and the column for the specific blogger focuses on the issue that they feel really passionate about. I feel really passionate about disability and bringing disability and ability status into the conversation and welcoming it as an identity. And I think that a lot of good is done by telling stories. I think that stories foster a lot of understanding and compassion and really kind of emphasize like our inherent sameness, because the reality is that people are more alike than they are different. And so that's kind of the objective of my Monday column with the Daily Cal.
So what got you interested in the topic of disabilities? I know you went over this a little bit, but can you go in more in depth?
Right, definitely. So I have mild hypotonic spastic cerebral palsy, and I also have a variety of other disabilities, so both physical and invisible, or visible and invisible, invisible and invisible. And so growing up as someone with disabilities, I never really knew how to like articulate my feelings about it, because it, you know, CP, it's so bizarre. It's like CP affects my life where it's like I get up every morning and it's something that's always there, but I've always thought of disability as like this really special thing. So fun story, when I was younger, I actually didn't realize that like cerebral palsy was a condition. I thought cerebral palsy was like my superhero name, and that it was something that made me really special. And so that's just like a really unique like perspective. And so growing up, my parents are really amazing. They are my biggest supporters. And so I went to a lot of doctor's appointments, and I went to a lot of therapy sessions. And it was, a lot of this was focused on improving my gait, improving my ability and my mobility, and kind of making everyday life like a little bit more functional. But there wasn't a lot of emphasis on like disability pride. And so like being a person with disabilities is something that's really pertinent to my identity, is something I do take a lot of pride in. So I think that it's really important to like validate those narratives. And so that's kind of what got me really interested in writing about disability, is I think that in a lot of other minority identities, there's like this kind of like very unifying characteristic, where in the disabled sector, disability is so incredibly individual, and it occurs on such a spectrum that I feel like that unification isn't there as much. And on my campus, being a student here, after experiencing this for a little bit, I decided that, you know, this is something that hopefully I can speak to and hopefully do a little bit of good.
So how would you like to see sort of the disability movement become unified, either within itself or even with other movements outside of it?
Excellent question. So I would like to see the disability rights and independent living movement become unified on my campus by encouraging people to speak up. I think that we all have different capabilities, and I think that everyone has those really unique strengths and weaknesses. And I feel like there is a lot of unity, and there's a lot of community and a common minority. And so I would really like to see people speak up. I would also really like to see integration of the disabled students program, or better, more integration of the disabled students program in campus as a whole. I would like to see awareness events. I would like to hear talks by professors who identify as folks with different abilities. And I would really like to see a sense of camaraderie and support and validation.
Mm-hmm. Now, you talk about that you have cerebral palsy, and I think it's always interesting. Can you describe what it is and what it isn't for you?
Right, so exactly. So for me, my cerebral palsy affects my mobility. And so basically what CP is it's not a disease. You can't catch it. It is typically from premature birth, or like early life trauma. So I was born as a preemie, and so like with that I developed CP, and so cerebral palsy affects my lower body, and throughout my life I've worn a variety of braces and twister straps and knee splints and serial casting and all of these different things, and been through a lot of physical and occupational therapy to like help increase my mobility and help maintain it. Yeah, and so that's kind of what my cerebral palsy is in like the medical sense, but to me, my cerebral palsy is also an identity because it's not like I wake up every morning and decide to put on my CP. It's something that's very visible. It's something that has like really affected my life in the sense that my CP wouldn't change it for anything. Like, I love my body, and I think that like growing up with a disability and identifying like as a person with disabilities.
You there? Jasmine? Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, are you there?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, we lost you in the middle of a sentence.
Okay, can you remind me where I left off?
I think you were talking about feeling comfortable with yourself and your body and...
Okay. So, yeah, so I think that, like, as a person with disabilities, it's really important to feel comfortable in yourself. And, you know, like I was saying, my cerebral palsy, it isn't something I chose, but it's also something I wouldn't exchange for anything. I think that, like, growing up as a person with disabilities, it makes you a kinder human. And I think that anyone who goes through adversity, like, you become stronger in that, but you also become more empathetic, more compassionate, and understanding. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I agree, definitely. We shared on the website an article you wrote about invisible disabilities, and terminology is a huge thing in with disability community, with outside of it and within it. What do you consider an invisible disability?
So I think an invisible disability is something that is not visible, but that doesn't mean that it's not physical. So typically people associate physical disabilities with visible disabilities. And so what that is to me, a visible disability is like a characteristic or a physical disability is a disability that affects, like, your body in a visible way, but invisible disability can have, like, physical ramifications. So visible disability is really broad. It encompasses, you know, autoimmune disabilities. It also encompasses a lot of mental health things, different ability statuses there, and ability identities. It also encompasses physical disabilities that have, like, physical disabilities whose effects are invisible from the outside, meaning that, for example, you can have a physical disability and your symptoms are very real and very valid, but they don't show or they're not apparent to someone from the outside looking in. And I think terminology is extremely important because it, like, validates that narrative. That just because I can't see something about your body doesn't mean that it's not real.
No, definitely. Would you also, like, for, like, people who, like, on spectrum disorders, if they're people who are harder to tell that they're on the spectrum? I know there's a lot of people on the autism spectrum who people don't identify as autism because they don't show the characteristic traits that they show, or would you consider that invisible disability, or how would you classify that?
So in terms of spectrum and invisible disability, I think that spectrum disorders definitely occur on the invisible disability. Spectrum disorders definitely fall underneath the umbrella of the invisible disability term, because disability is self-identified. So I think that a really unique thing with spectrum disorders is, right, so, like, people present and experience different things, especially if, like, those, like, effects and experiences that you're having aren't necessarily, like, your most dominant ones or the ones that, like, appear the most physical, it definitely falls underneath the spectrum of invisible disability. What's really funny is that people have an archetype of conditions where, like, you think of an experience, so you think of autism, and you think autism looks like a certain something. When the fact of the matter is that people aren't a prototype, there is no archetype, and there is no box that you check for whether someone who experiences a certain disability looks like this or not.
Do you think some of that gets portrayed, people get that sort of box perception because of media perceptions of certain people? I know there's with autism, there's certain perceptions of what it has to look like. There's been schizophrenia campaigns of like, look, this is schizophrenia doesn't have to look like that. Do you think media sometimes plays a role in our, this is what it has to look like?
I think media definitely plays a role in the portrayal of disability. I think that media, especially in terms of mental health, portrays the most extreme cases that really aren't experienced by the vast majority of people. And I think media has this really unhealthy tendency to sensationalize disability, meaning that, you know, you never see, for example, your example of schizophrenia. In the media, we very rarely see portrayals of people with schizophrenia leading functional, happy, fulfilling lives. You always see extreme cases of like either hassle and heartbreak or extreme success. And I think that like polarizing nature of the portrayal of disability like through media can be a very alienating thing, because folks have this image, and if somebody or themselves like don't identify with this extreme image, it kind of like invalidates how they feel about that specific disability. And so I think it's also really interesting how disability is portrayed in the media. In my experience, disability is portrayed as like a very asexual or angelic thing, where people are thought of it's more in like the context of their label, rather than like thinking of, you know, what I'm trying to say is people are more than their like diagnosis and more than the label of their condition. But I feel like in the media, you only ever see people with disabilities portrayed as these extreme conditions, where that is their only and most dominant identity.
Well, yeah, I would agree. I mean, you see even people who we see Sheldon in the Big Bang Theory, who's supposedly autistic, and you see very, very extreme you see very pronounced autistic characteristics that doesn't always go profound with everybody. There's different variations, and there tends to be a lot of these characters are sort of very easy to point out because they sort of find archetypes.
Right. I think that people are more inclined towards archetypes because it's easier to understand something that's as mysterious as disability if you have like a certain set of characteristics. For example, like Sheldon and his portrayal of supposedly being autistic. So like the behavioral traits and the mannerisms that he has, when in reality, like, people occur on a spectrum and people don't fit inside a box of conditions.
Exactly. I mean, why do you think invisible disabilities are less talked about?
I think invisible disabilities are less talked about because they are inherently not visible in the sense, or not like as visible. So I think it's really easy to talk about physical disabilities because it is like this actualization of an identity. So for example, if you encounter someone who is wheelchair bound, you immediately assume that the fact that they're in a wheelchair like affects their life, affects their day, and like that is the experience that they're speaking from. However, for persons with invisible disabilities, like there is no physical actualization of that identity usually, and so I think people don't talk about it as much because, well, first, it makes them uncomfortable, and the second reason why they don't talk about it as much is because there isn't like that symbol. And so I think it's really important to acknowledge the fact that especially with invisible disability, people are speaking from a background and speaking from experiences that other people may not necessarily be able to understand or like put an image to. And so I think that's why invisible disabilities are less talked about. I think invisible disabilities also have a massive stigma around them, because I think invisible disabilities are often associated like with mental health, because a lot of mental health issues fall in the spectrum of invisible disability. And I think that especially in the United States, but also in a lot of other places, there's a lot of fear and there's a lot of stereotype and a lot of anxiety around talking about mental health disorders.
It's a really good point. And you, in another article, you talk about inspiration, and you talk about inspiration porn. And what do you mean by that? And I know conversely in that article, you talk about what is real inspiration. So can you go over what is inspiration porn and what is real inspiration?
Right, so let's talk about what is inspiration porn, and then from that, let me talk about what you're saying, quote-unquote, like, real inspiration. And so inspiration porn is portrayal of people with disabilities doing everyday activities that are seen as inspirational. So the image that comes to mind when I think of inspiration porn is photos of folks with disabilities, specifically on Facebook that I've encountered, where people are going about like an everyday activity, for example, getting dressed or you know, feeding yourself, eating breakfast. But because these activities, these everyday activities are gone about in a like less conventional way, they are seen as inspirational. And this is problematic because normal is a state of mind. So what I mean by that is inspiration porn or cripspiration is an issue because normal is like very individual, and if someone's conditions are ordinary to them, they shouldn't be extraordinary to you. And I think that a lot of people find inspiration in bodies, where I think people should find inspiration not in someone's body and the actions they're doing, like with that body, but like what they do as a person, because personhood is more important than a condition. And so I think what's really inspirational is for me when folks with disabilities look at like their situation, or they look at themselves in the context of their situation and make a conscious choice to be a person who is not defined by their barriers, but is defined by someone, by like overcoming them. And so there's a really fine line with inspiration porn, because what I'm saying is that people need to not find other people with disabilities inherently inspirational, because it's a very alienating and otherizing thing, and like normal is a state of mind. But if you find inspiration in actions, like what if you're finding those actions specifically inspirational? What I mean by that is it's okay to be inspired by people once you know them. However, mm-hmm. It's not okay to look at a person who is going about an everyday activity in a disabled way and find like that inspirational. You should find inspiration in minds, not bodies. You should find inspiration in attitudes. You should find inspiration in personalities. You should really kind of think about it as like, think about it like this. I think I touched upon this in this article, is that your body is basically a shell for your brain. So your mm-hmm. body is like nothing more than this like physical entity who's moving through life, but the fact of the matter is that your mind is controlling like who you are, and that's like where your like inherent personhood like resides. And so I think it's really important to like acknowledge that personhood and find like those minds, not those bodies, inspirational.
So, I mean, I think people like things in short, so I want to throw a thing about that I was thinking about is inspiration is not about who you are, it's about what you do, and what I think
right.
I mean by that. Yeah, does that make sense?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, I think you also touched on a never really interesting point, and you talk about unemployment. And unemployment, I think, is one of those interesting issues because it's something that affects everybody, but it's higher for people with disabilities. And why do you think it's higher? And what steps do you think can be taken by people with disabilities and by employers?
So I think that employment is a lot higher for people with disabilities, and I think there are two reasons for that. I think the first reason is that there's inherent ableism in the hiring process, and I think a lot of that comes from like first impressions, especially for people with visible disabilities, which is the experience that I can mostly speak to, is that there is this idea of like professionality, and so when you go in for an interview and when someone like looks a different way, there's this like idea that perhaps like they wouldn't be as equipped for the job. And so I think that's point number one. I think point number two is why it occurs is because like people think of themselves as disabled and then think, well, because of my disability, like I can't do said job. Or because I don't see or I haven't encountered another person with disabilities like in the specific job field, like maybe this would be too hard, or like maybe I should really shoot for something lower. So I think what can be done is two things. I think first, people should like push themselves and think, okay, well, if I'm not seeing anyone or if I'm not encountering anyone who is like disabled in the specific job sector, then why don't I go be that person for someone else? You know, just because like I've encountered anyone with like my condition doing this doesn't mean it actually can't be done. I think the other thing that people can do in terms of like unemployment, it actually lies with the employers. And so I challenge employers to hire more folks with disabilities and to have like awareness trainings and seminars and all these different things. To foster more of a community and create a welcoming and inclusive environment.
That's a really good answer. You talk about how you used to want to hide your disability. What did it feel like, and how do you feel about gaining the confidence and acceptance for who you are? And I know you've gone over this a little bit, but I think this is a really important point.
Right. So I think it's incredibly important to accept who you are. And I think that if you're going to own anything, you definitely need to own yourself. And so I used to want to hide my disabilities. I denied and minimized, and it was a really rough time. And so I think I did that for two reasons. I think first I did that because growing up is awkward and people are insecure, especially around the age of like 13. All these different hormones are kicking in. You don't know how to deal with changing bodies, especially like changing bodies that like are disabled. And so I think that I wanted to hide my disability because I was really insecure. Also because I used to think that like success kind of was like interlaced with physical perfection. And so I didn't want to acknowledge that things were more difficult for me because I didn't want people to feel sorry for me. I didn't want to be held back from achieving things. I was scared of ableism. I was also really scared of people only seeing me in the context of cerebral palsy, so my like disability label. And so I wanted to emphasize that like I was so much more than that. However, I really come to terms with my ability status. And I think part of that is growing up, and I think part of that is also recognizing that if you don't want people to see you in the context of your label, then speak to that experience and talk about how you are a person with disabilities, not a disabled person.
Mm-hmm. And I have, why do you think disability is mostly talked about by men and there's not as many women advocates or female voices in the conversation?
I think that there's not as many female voices in the conversation and that disability is mostly talked about by men because I think that a lot of times in several situations, female voices and voices of women are silenced. I think that it's specifically in the United States, a lot of women narratives are deemed like less important. And so I think that there are a lot of really cool organizations that speak to this. One of them is the Vagina Monologues. And so I went to a showing of the Vagina Monologues last September, and one of the monologues was by this really incredible woman named Jasmine, not me, like another Jasmine, who talked about her experiences, like not being a burn victim, but also being a burn survivor. And so I think that also acknowledging the fact that we're talking about why women don't talk about like disability narratives as much as men, but also acknowledging the fact that like not every woman has a vagina, and not every vagina is owned by a woman, is I think a really important thing. And so I think, like, in short, why disability narratives aren't discussed is because I think that like women's voices aren't seen like as valid as male voices.
So basically, in disabilities, we're seeing a larger scale perspective of a larger society where we're not really valuing women's experiences as much as we are men.
Right. And I think that plays to a larger, like, underlying theme of, like, general sexism, which I think a lot of steps are being taken, but there's always more to do. There's always, like, more good work that can be done.
No, definitely. I think, is there anything else that you'd like to share with our listeners today?
I would like to thank you for listening. I would like to also encourage you to be unapologetically yourselves. And so your voice is authentic and your narrative is valid. And I want you to know that, like, I want to hear your voice. So I really want to hear what you have to say. And I want to hear about your experiences, and I hope that you have a really great day. Thank you so much.
Thank you.